You're listening to the First in Football podcast, celebrating 150 years of Princeton Tigers football.
It's the Week 4 edition of the First in Football podcast. The Princeton Tigers up to 19th in the coaches poll, 21st in the media poll after their 21-10 victory at home Saturday against Columbia in the 2019 Ivy League opener. Cody Cruchiel, Jerry Price with you. Jerry, that game, the story, really defense for the Tigers. It's not often the last couple of years we talk about the offense doing just enough, but Princeton down at the half, the defense pitches a shutout in the second half, and big day by Colonnetti and Ryan Quigley sealing it.
Yeah, so that game to me was all about, it doesn't matter how, you just have to win that game. You know, the stat is that Princeton's won 12 Ivy League titles, and they've won the Ivy opener all 12 times, and only three times this decade, this century, I mean, has a team lost the Ivy opener and got any team and come back and gotten at least a share of the championship. And twice it was with the team that beat them in their opener. So you need to win that game for the most part. 10-7 at the half, it's a good test for your team that's had it fairly easy the first 2 weeks. Responded really well. So many key moments of that game, maybe the sack by Wright and Strain in the second half, or just the pass that Davidson threw to Classy to keep one drive alive, set up a touchdown. But no matter what, it really added up to three really nice second-half drives by the offense, two for touchdowns and one that killed 6.5 minutes of the fourth quarter, and then just a shutout from the defense. You won the game, and now you can look ahead.
Looking ahead, Lafayette, Friday night, ESPNU, 7 o'clock. And this is a Lafayette team, a familiar face leading the program. Princeton graduate John Garrett, one of Bob Sorace's good friends in college football. Year three for John Garrett. The first couple of years haven't seen a ton of success. 0-5 this year, and that's about the point where a lot of coaches and teams start to turn the corner. All you have to look at is Bob Sorace in year three.
Yeah, so you know Bob Sorace was 2-20 at one point. You forget that now that he's way over 500. He's won 70% of his games since then, and three championships. That's what John Garrett's trying to do with Lafayette. The other thing about the Patriot League is that's about as evenly matched a league as you're going to find everywhere. So once they get into league games, same is true of Bucknell, who Princeton played in week two. Once they get into league games, it's a whole new story for any of those teams. And what they're really trying to do is position themselves for when they do start playing those league games, that they're playing at their best. And, you know, Bob said that Lafayette's had some chances. They've been in games in the fourth quarter, haven't gone their way. It's a game that they're looking forward to coming down here and trying to compete with Princeton. Of course, any team that plays Princeton wants to be the team that ends the long winning streak. And then there's the John Garrett piece where you're playing against one of your good friends. As Bob will allude to, he talks about how John Garrett was the one who got him into the NFL in the first place, coaching with the Cincinnati Bengals. And you throw in the idea that it's a Friday night, it makes it a little different. It's on ESPNU, makes it a little different. And it should be a pretty good event.
Talked about Lafayette, 0-5, an evenly matched Patriot League. All five of their games so far have been non-conference games. And the score's not quite as lopsided as they've been. A narrow loss to William & Mary, lost by a field goal at Monmouth. Penn last weekend, or I guess 2 weekends ago, 28-24. And then really the only game they were blown out, Albany 36-7. So it's a team that is young. They've struggled to close out games, and we talk about that youth. Freshman quarterback, their top two rushers are freshmen. Two of their top four receivers are freshmen, and you've seen growing pains. They've been sacked the second most times in the nation. They're kind of making mistakes and off places you expect young teams to be off. That said, you're 5 weeks into the season, you figure that they're going to get better.
Their passing numbers are very good, which means if you can keep your quarterbacks upright, you're going to some good things are going to happen for you. So that's a challenge for Princeton, who pressured Columbia's two quarterbacks very well on Saturday. The team you forgot to mention, who also defeated Lafayette, of course, Sacred Heart, who beat Lafayette 59-40. But again, so, you know, it's a team that scored some points. You're right, the Albany game is the only game that really looks lopsided. And when you play that many young guys and you have a coach trying to build something for the future, I think that it's much the same thing that we talked about with Bucknell, which is the coach is telling you all week in practice, we're getting better, I see it. Then you go out on Saturday and you lose again, and it's the here we go again mentality. You need the win to break through. They're going to get the win. If it doesn't come Friday, it's going to come in another game. You don't want to be the team that they get the breakthrough win against.
First in Football podcast, we have a couple of guests coming up later in the show. We'll talk to first-year wide receivers coach Brian Flynn coming over after a successful run in the same position at Villanova. But first up, here's Jerry's weekly conversation with Tigers coach Bob Sorace.
Back on the First in Football podcast, Jerry Price joined by the head coach of the Princeton Tigers, Bob Sorace. Coach, welcome.
Thanks, Jerry.
coming off a very good win over a very good Columbia team, 21-10 Saturday on Powers Field. Looking ahead to the game Friday night, 7 o'clock kickoff at home against the Lafayette Leopards. And basically start with the same question each week, I guess. Where do you think your team is right now?
Yeah, well that was great to be in a battle, one that I thought that was going to take place. Great respect for Columbia. They are a terrific defense. They got talent offensively. They're well coached. So we anticipated a battle going into it, and love how our guys grinded that one out.
What was it like at halftime? You're not, you know, you weren't even close to being down at the half in either of your first two games. That was 70-21 in the first two games combined by halftime. And now it's 10-7 Columbia, and they got some momentum after the way the first half ended, and you know, second half was fairly dominant.
Yeah, if you're a freshman like Anthony Corbin or whatever, he's probably thinking I'm literally nuts, because we play the first two games, and I couldn't be more disappointed at certain things that we didn't finish. And I let them know that at halftime. I loved how we played. We had some errors and everything else, but I loved it. I trusted we were going to have resilience. And it was a much different speech, because I went into halftime like, man, we're going to be really good. Like, we are flying around the field. We're flying to the football. We just got to iron out a few mistakes.
So Kevin Davidson throws for 271 yards. And, you know, it wasn't the video game numbers of the first two games, but he was very strong. He led you on the two long touchdown drives in the second half that won the game, and also the long drive that basically killed the second half of the fourth quarter, kept Columbia from having a chance to get back into it. And it was a day where it wasn't coming easily, and yet he made some really big plays and had a good day.
Yeah, the Columbia has a tremendous pass rush. And I thought Kevin did a great job hanging in there, managed the pocket, and held on the ball and got rid of it at the right time on a few occasions and did a great job with that.
And so defensively, it was just lockdown mode in the second half. Columbia shut out after the 10-7 lead at halftime. So many guys played so well. You know, I don't even know where you want to start. You want to start with Samuel Wright, or do you want to start with Jeremiah JT, Tyler?
Yeah.
Or do you want to start with James Johnson?
TJ.
Floyd.
Yeah, those guys all played really well. And, you know, Sam Wright is just, I keep saying it, he's so talented, and he works so hard, and we're watching him develop right in front of us into an elite player. Jeremiah Tyler makes us tick. You know, his energy, his big playability, he makes us tick. Jimmy John, you know, it's just like a chip off the old block from his brother, just so physical. TJ Floyd continues to lead back there to make plays. He's just so steady, and you know, I thought our guys really played well.
So when I went to nominate people for Ivy League Player of the Week, and I'm thinking, all right, who's the offensive player of the week to nominate? There really wasn't one. I mean, it was basically everybody could have been nominated, and you know, I guess there's a certain, you know, satisfaction as a coach. And then I saw on Instagram that Henry Bird, offensive lineman, was actually the team's offensive player of the week. So it sort of spoke to what I was thinking when I was trying to figure out who to nominate. But I would think that there's a certain satisfaction knowing that, you know, it was just a total cohesive team effort offensively.
We went into the game, we talked about that, and playing as a team and becoming a team. And you only find out about yourself in these competitive, incredibly hard-fought games. And Henry Bird was matched up with their defensive end, DeLorenzi, who is one sack away from being the all-time sacker at Columbia. They got Marcellus Wiley, Josh Martin, still in the NFL, some prolific players. This guy's going to wind up being the best of the group, and Henry held him to one assist on the day.
It was a very strong performance, not just by Henry Bird, but across the offensive line, because you could see that Columbia, from their stats, that was their strength. And Davidson also, I thought, did a good job of moving around, not just standing still in the pocket. And he escaped a couple of times, bought himself some time. He had one good run. He threw on the run a few times when he needed to, but he was under control. And really, I thought, did a good job of neutralizing what has made Columbia effective.
Yeah, maturity at quarterback is so huge. And he's really playing at a mature level. And that's, again, really, really good to see.
So Princeton now 1-0 in the Ivy League, 3-0 overall, moving up in the rankings, 21st in one poll, 19th in the other. I'm going to not even ask the question, because I know you don't care about that at this stage of the game where you're ranked, or do you? I'm assuming you don't. No coach does.
I don't think any coach does, but literally we're worrying about getting ready for the day. Like that's, we live in a different world. You know, coaches do that, but it's, you know, what's on, what are we doing on this day? And that's where you live.
So one last thing from the Columbia game, though, is the stat that Princeton's won 12 Ivy League championships and has won its Ivy opener all 12 times. So there is that sort of, you know, you can lose the Ivy opener and still come back and win the league, but you really want to get out ahead and, you know, join the teams that are all 1-0 after one league game.
Yeah, it's not Major League Baseball, 162-game season. We play a 7-game season, so each league game is magnified in the race.
So this Friday night, it's Lafayette, the final non-league game of the year, and it's, you know, the Leopards 0-5, but have had some close games, have been in the fourth quarter. And, of course, their head coach is a former Princeton wide receiver, John Garrett, the third of the Garrett, or the first of the Garrett brothers with Judd and Jason, teammate of yours, close friend of yours. Let's talk a little bit about him and your relationship with him.
Yeah, no, I came to Princeton and there's this hype or buzz or whatever. It wasn't social media or anything. And I'm on my official visit and guys are talking about the Garrett brothers. And it became a little bit mythological because you couldn't even look things up. And then you enter campus and you have to play freshman football. You can't play with the varsity. And you hear about these three guys that are running the scout team and how good they are. And then when our season ended, we play a 6-game schedule. So the last month or a little bit less than a month, we go and practice. And we didn't have a great year that year. We had a lot of injuries. It was the greatest scout team offense you could possibly play on with three NFL players in the Garretts and some of the other guys.
And you've stayed close to him through the years?
Yeah, he brought me to the NFL. I mean, the phone call came from him. He got a promotion to tight end coach with Cincinnati with the Cincinnati Bengals, called me and said, would you like to work in the NFL? And I said, yes. And he said, great, I got you a ticket. You're coming out tomorrow. And I went home. I called my wife. I said, hey, we have to talk, which that never goes well when you tell.
What
happened? And I told her, and she got a map out. She goes, it better not be on the left side. And here she is, you know, Princeton grad, way smarter than me, doesn't know where Cincinnati, Ohio is. And we ended up loving it there. The Garretts took care of us. John, his wife, Honor, his family. We lived about a mile apart. We rode to work together. And you really, so much of our culture is formed by things, not only John and Jason and Judd, but their father, Jim Garrett. And so much, and I got to know him very well, and their late father, so much of the things we do in our culture is Garrett-based, because I just love everything about what they mean, what they do, the type of people they are, how much they love football, and how intelligent they are about things they do.
So one last question before we let you go. It's the first of two Friday night games. The other one will be Friday night at Cornell. That's a different set of issues because of the logistics of travel. But in general, what does playing on a Friday night do when you're so regimented in how your week goes?
Yeah, so we work all this out in the summer as a staff, how we want to approach the week. So what we do is our Monday, we have an extra meeting. Our Sunday doesn't really change much. Our Tuesday is a Tuesday practice. Wednesday, we do not hit, but we go through our plays. Thursday, we run. We run hard on Thursday, not long, but we run hard. And then we're ready for Friday. And, you know, we've done a great job. Our coaches have done a great job with the breakdowns and preparation. And Lafayette's coming off a bye. So I think our guys, you know, have done a good job, hopefully getting us ready.
Kickoff 7 o'clock on Powers Field Friday night, ESPNU as well, Princeton and Lafayette. Coach, thanks for being with us and good luck.
Thanks, Jerry.
We'll be back after this with a little bit more on the First in Football podcast.
The Alchemist and Barrister is proud to present the First in Football podcast each week throughout the Princeton football season. Check out the newest menu edition at the A&B, breakfast on Saturdays and Sunday from 9 to 12:30, better known as Feed the Day, highlighting their specialty omelets, eggs your way, and French toast. Visit the Alchemist and Barrister in the heart of Princeton and online at theandb.com. The Alchemist and Barrister, well known as the Cheers of Princeton, is proud to present the First in Football podcast and support the Princeton Tigers. Back on the First in Football podcast, presented by the Alchemist and Barrister, joined now by Tigers first-year wide receivers coach Brian Flynn. Brian, thanks for stopping by, spending a few minutes on a busy short game week.
Yeah, great to be here. Absolutely.
12 seasons at Villanova, including an FCS national championship in 2009. I have to imagine that after you left Villanova, you had a lot of opportunities. Why was Princeton the right next stop for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've known a lot of the guys on staff for a while. You know, Mike Willis was a guy I had stayed in touch with during the season last year. Sean Gleason, you know, obviously had known him from coming here and talking some football. I've known Bob for a while. You know, I'm just 15 miles down the road, so I've come here a couple times, you know, probably five or six if I thought about it, to visit with Dennis Goldman when he was the receiver coach here. There's always a great clinic here every winter where guys came from all over the East Coast to talk football. So, you know, we'd always studied the Princeton offense wherever I'd been and really, you know, admired what they did. Ironically, I was supposed to come here and talk football with Sean and Mike and Andy and all those guys on the day I ended up interviewing in February. So it you know, I just always kind of studied what guys did here and stayed in touch, and the trips were easy and they were always really beneficial for me.
So you come in the year after Jesper Horsted and Steven Carlson graduate, move on to the NFL. What did you know about the group that you had coming back at wide receiver?
Yeah, not a whole lot. I think the one thing that about, you know, Jesper and Steve was they played so many snaps. You know, I've coached receivers for 20-some years. I've never seen two guys play 75 snaps a game for 10 straight games. So there wasn't a ton of film on the guys who were here. You know, I saw Byrne play a little bit. You saw Dylan Classy play a little bit. But you really, I didn't know much about them. But when I got here in February, we were in the middle of winter workouts. And once you watched a workout or two and kind of saw, you know, not just the athleticism of some of the guys, but just how hard they worked. You know, the culture that Bob has built here and the guys have done on offense. You got a good feeling about the situation.
Let's go back to your college career, a two-time Division III national championship, champion at Mount Union out in Ohio, 1993 and 1996. And then that's where you got your college football coaching start out at Mount Union. If you don't follow Division III football, you may not know what Mount Union is, but they're an absolute powerhouse.
Yeah, my freshman year was the first national championship, and my senior year was the second. And then my first 2 years of coaching were there. Now, since I left, which I left in 98, they've probably won nine more and probably been to, you know, 10, 15 national championship games. But it was a great place to play. You know, I played for Larry Karras, who's the winning percentage, the winningest coach in the history of college football. I played with his son, who is now the head coach there, doing a great job, Vince Karras. And one of the great things for me, it was one of the few schools in the early 90s that threw the ball, you know, the majority of the time. So it was a lot of fun to play there. We learned quite a bit. You really couldn't have had a better college experience than I had.
So now let's talk about some of the guys that you do have here. And this is a wide receiver crew that hasn't missed a beat after the graduation of Jesper Horsted and Steven Carlson. Start with a senior, Andrew Griffin, a player who coming into this season had three career catches. 2 weeks ago against Bucknell, nine catches, 200 yards. Ties the all-time program record with four touchdowns, and a player that seems to know the offense as well as anybody.
Yeah, I mean, Griffin really knows it as good as anybody on the staff. You know, I think he's been around here a long time. He was well coached by, you know, Mark Rosenbaum last year and Dennis Goldman before him. You know, he's mastered the offensive term of where do I line up, what do I do. But he couples that with, you know, playing extremely hard. He works his behind off, practice, again, all our winter workout stuff. He's first in everything. He does a great job leading the guys, you know, make sure everyone's where they need to be all the time. You know, I don't think anybody in our program, when you've watched him work, over the years, is surprised that he's playing well. You know, that was the expectation when you watched how he worked. But, you know, the four touchdowns in a game was, you know, setting a record was everybody was happy because we saw the work that he put in for.
We keep going back to Horsted and Carlson, but two guys that are 6'4", 225, 230, 235, and then this year the Ivy League leader in catches per game at six per game, Jacob Bermelin, a little bit of a different build at 5'9", 165.
Yeah, you know, I think playing receiver is about getting separation from your defender. And, you know, Berm is not a guy that's going to jump over people, but he's a guy that's, you know, really great in the short area, gets himself open. Again, he's a 100-mile-an-hour guy. He never takes a snap off. So you can see that he was a guy that people are going to have a tough time covering man-to-man with when you put him in the slot with a nickel or a linebacker or a safety. So, again, his production, you know, is not a surprise either because I saw him do it all spring. I saw him do it all preseason against a really good defense. So, you know, he's doing what we thought he would do.
With Dylan Classy, it doesn't get a whole lot better than that one-handed catch between two defenders he made this past Saturday.
Yeah, he's you know, as a receiver coach, you're almost compelled to yell two hands, even when the guy catches it with one hand. You know, and it's Coach Matunga, our running backs coach, Jamel always says, you know, if you're wrong, you better be right. And I think that Dylan's a great example of that. You know, he's another guy who in practice has made a habit of making those type of catches, you know, whether it's one hand or two, that you just go, when you see him do it in the game, nobody is shocked. You know, say his ball skills are that level and he practices that way. And you'd like to see him throw another hand up, but during the game, you don't say a word.
Andre Yosivash, we talk about two-sport athletes. He was an Ivy League champion in the track heptathlon last spring. Didn't step on the football field last year, didn't have a single game. This year, 8 career catches, 4 of them have been touchdowns, just a nose for the end zone.
Yeah, he is. You know, I didn't know a ton about Andre when I got here, kind of like everyone else. But you knew that, you know, his size and a guy who can win the heptathlon, finish third in the decathlon, you know, he's just a different kind of athlete. But he's also, he works extremely hard. You know, the spring was tough for him because he was hurt, you know, and he was doing football, he was doing track, his workload was heavy, and he's the kind of guy that's, you know, not inclined to take a day off or ask for one. But he's another guy who we thought, you know, his upside is really, really high. I don't think he's there yet, you know, but he's definitely trending in that direction.
I know you have experience with two-sport athletes. I'll go back to Villanova and that 2009 national championship team. Matt Caesar, who was the most outstanding player in that game, has spent some time in the major leagues as an outfielder with the Cubs and the Padres. Andre Yosivash, a two-sport athlete here at Princeton. What do you do as a positional coach, as a wide receivers coach, to help two-sport athletes balance the two sports and then also academics at places like Villanova and Princeton?
Yeah, I think that those kind of guys have a good handle on how to manage their time to begin with. And Matt and Andre are similar in terms of they also, even when they aren't practicing for football, would come in on their own and watch film and study the offense and make sure they were ahead of the curve there. So it, you know, usually with those guys, I think you got to go the other way where you're trying to make sure they don't run themselves into the ground. You know, it's a lot to ask somebody to go through a football practice and then go practice track or vice versa. So I think it's managing the schedule and really kind of protecting them against themselves, because those kind of guys are also guys that won't say no to any kind of work. You know, so I think, and that's the same way with Andre. Andre in the spring was, he would do whatever any coach asked him to do. So I think it's kind of like, and Coach Trace done a great job of it. Look at the big picture and manage it so he can be healthy and excel at both.
Your top 4 guys this year, last year combined for 17 catches, less than 200 yards and a touchdown. So we didn't know a lot about those top 4 coming into the season. Who's next up for this program? Who should we be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think Michael Polk has done a really good job. You know, he's worked extremely hard to learn the offense. He worked extremely hard in the offseason. You know, I think he's in a good position to kind of be the next guy in there. Michael Axelrod is a freshman, has done a really good job moving from safety in the summer. So I think those are 2 guys that have a chance to get on the field here sooner rather than later. You know, Zach Kelly has been here for a long time as a senior, worked extremely hard, played quarterback, so knows every nuance of the offense that you possibly could. So I think we're not playing a lot of guys now, but I think we will here sooner rather than later. We definitely will before the season is over. So I think I'm excited about the depth that we're building. We're not quite using it yet, but I think we will pretty soon.
Obviously, every school, every football program is different, has its own nuances. How's coaching at Princeton been different than your 12 years at Villanova?
You know, Villanova's an academic school. You know, it's not an Ivy League school, but it's a well-renowned school. It's one of the top schools in the country. It's just different here. You know, it's kind of a whole nother level of, you know, commitment really on the player's end to do an extra work. You know, I think it's to manage in their time. You know, I think the workload here is a lot different in terms of academically, but I also think the guys are, the culture that I walked into in the room on offense in a football program built by Bob is just, it's second to none. You know, when I run into John Lovett when he was here in the spring or some of these older guys, you know, there's just a culture of hard work here, I think, that permeates into the classroom, into the weight room with Mike Tufo. I mean, it's just, I think it's different, and I think it's a little bit more difficult, but I also think, you know, the way things have been set up here and the kind of guys Bob has brought here to coach and to play have really given everybody a chance to succeed.
Brian, good catching up with you, spending a few minutes, and good luck this Friday night against Lafayette.
Awesome. Thanks, Cody. Appreciate it.
That's Princeton first-year wide receivers coach Brian Flynn. Thanks for joining us on the Week 4 edition of the First in Football podcast.